to turn to the book of Song of Solomon, chapter 8. In 1 Kings 4, verse 32, we see that 1,005 songs are attributed to Solomon. And certainly this one, the Song of Solomon, is the most excellent of them all. And of the 66 Bibles, 66 books in the Bible, Song of Solomon is the most unique. It is primarily allegorical. It abounds with metaphors and imagery. Has a wide range of approaches, wide range of application, and it can be very difficult to interpret. In fact, many times it's difficult to determine who is speaking. You have to really follow it. That being said, it is also a very controversial book and a very neglected book as well. As we said this morning, as you look at Song of Solomon, you find basically two main characters, a bridegroom and a bride. And these two individuals throughout the book are seen in love and communion with one another. It is a song of divine protection. It is a song of pure love. Throughout the song, we hear and see the bridegroom and the bride expressing their love and their appreciation for each other. It was written basically to chronicle the passionate love between this bridegroom and his bride. Now, I believe that the song portrays the special loving relationship between Christ, the bridegroom, and his bride, the kind of church that he established during his earthly ministry. That being said, again, the song has a wide range of approaches, wide range of application. And there are many, many personal applications to individual child of God. Applying the song to the Lord's church or applying the song to the individual child of God, we see a union of oneness between the Lord and His people. We see the importance of being faithful to the one who loves our souls. And also we see the importance of being occupied until the bridegroom returns. And as you read the song, you see, you get a glimpse of the heart and love that the bridegroom has for the bride. You get also a glimpse of the love and heart that the child of God has for the Lord. There are many principles concerning marriage between a man and a woman found throughout Song of Solomon. In fact, I've often prayed about preaching a series of messages upon marriage just using the book of Song of Solomon. There's so many ways that you can approach this book. We want to take our thoughts tonight from a question that is asked in chapter 8 and verse 5. Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness leaning upon her beloved? We can make application to the church collectively. We make application to the individual as well. The question follows a charge that the bride had given to the daughters of Jerusalem in verse 4. He says, she said, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, that ye stir not up nor awake my love until he please. She's asking them not to disturb the fellowship that he and she is having at this time, that he and she is enjoying at this time. This prompted the question, who is this? Who is this? In this question, we see a sense of puzzlement. Who is this? In this question, we see a sense of wonder. We see a sense of amazement. It is asked in a sense of seeing something that is not normal, something that is strange, something that is mystifying. And perhaps the question was even asked with a sense of anger. Who is this? I want to speak tonight on the subject of a puzzling life to the world. Our lives ought to puzzle the world. The church ought to be a puzzlement to the world. It ought to appear as something very, very strange. So much so that they ask, who is this? Who is this? The Lord's churches and the Lord's people are to be noticeably peculiar, so much so that the world takes notice, so much so that the world asks with puzzlement and wonder and even anger, who is this? In this question, we notice some things about this one of whom it is asked. Who is this? In this question, we see the life that you and I are to live in this world as children of God and as members of one of the Lord's churches. So we just want to consider the question tonight, who is this that cometh up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved? I want to notice several things about this question. The first thing we want to see is the residence of this one of whom the question is asked. Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness? The world in which we live, the world in which we serve God, throughout the Bible, is referred to as a wilderness. Shortly before Christ was arrested, we hear him praying in John 17 and verse 11. And I believe he's praying in particular for his church, the apostles, that night. But what he prays applies to all of God's people as well. And now I am no more in the world, he said, but these are in the world. The world, I'm not speaking of creation, but the world as a system of living is condemned everywhere in the Word of God. There is not one word of commendation concerning the world as a system of living. Not one. It's all condemning. The world has a system of living, is under the dominion of Satan. The world as a system of living is regulated by the policies and the agenda of the devil. The world has a system of living, has a system of life, is the embodiment of Satan's spirit, and it bears his image. There's nothing good about the world as a system of living. Considered morally, the world is synonymous with the kingdom of Satan. Considered morally, the world lives in the sphere of rebellion against God. In fact, when God became incarnate, we read in John 1 and verse 10, the world knew him not, and still doesn't. The world knows not Christ. We see also that Jesus would declare of the world in John 7 and verse 7, he said, me, it hateth, and still does. Still does. Matthew 13, verse 22, Jesus spoke of the strangling power of the world, saying that the world's cares and the deceitfulness of its riches choke the word, and it becometh unfruitful. Jesus said in Matthew 18 and verse 7, woe unto the world because of offenses. The world is offensive to God. The world is filled with offenses. Paul, in speaking of the world as a system of life in Galatians 1 and verse 4, referred to it as this present evil world. It's evil. And it hasn't gotten any better since Paul penned those words. Peter mentions the pollutions of the world in 2 Peter 2 and verse 20. And John informs us in 1 John 4 and verse 3 that the spirit of the world is the spirit of Antichrist. This is the world in which we live. This is the world in which we serve God. The world has a system of life that does not honor God. And when it gives any semblance of honor to God, it is only to honor the God that they have imagined in their mind. You present to them the God of this book, and they hate it. This world has no interest in honoring God. They do not admire God. Again, any semblance of admiration is an admiration toward the God that they have imagined, what they want God to be. The world does not seek God. And in spite of what our currency says, the world does not trust the Lord. As a system of life, the world is against God. Now, this world has a system of life is like a wilderness. It's a very traumatic place for anyone who wants to do right. The world is a traumatic place. It is a place of wandering. It is a place of despair. It is a place where you can become easily lost, where you just wander around. This world is a wilderness. It is a place where you will not find rest. It is a place of many pitfalls, many traps, many snags, a place where one can very easily become maimed and trapped. It is a place of obstacles. It is a place of spiritual desolation. For the child of God, it is a place many times of dilemma. and proves to be a place of trouble, a place of distress, a place of difficulty, a place of hardships, a place of tremendous strain and distress of soul, a place of misery and suffering and sorrow and pain and affliction. This is where this woman lived. This is where you and I live in this world, in a wilderness. But notice, secondly, she's moving her direction. Look at her direction. Look at where she's going. It says, who is this that, and then notice, cometh. She's moving. Who is this that cometh? Up. She's ascending. She's ascending from, out of, the wilderness. That ought to be true of every one of the Lord's churches. That ought to be true of every child of God. Our direction is that we are ascending up out of the wilderness. This was the direction. She's not going further into the wilderness. She's coming up from the wilderness. And for you and I, we're never to go further into the wilderness. We're to be coming up from the wilderness. And this is very mystifying to the world. This is very strange to the world. This even becomes a point of anger to the world. Here is this one, and she's leaving the wilderness. She's coming up out of the wilderness. Notice in 1 Peter chapter 4, again, to be coming up from the wilderness is very, very puzzling to the world. Verse 3 and 4 of 1 Peter chapter 4. For the time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lasciviousness, lusts, excess of wine, revelings, banquetings, and abominable idolatries. Wherein they, the Gentiles, the people of the world, think it strange that ye run not with them to the same excess of riot. And notice the anger. They not only think it's strange, they speak evil of you. Here is this bride, she's coming up from the wilderness. And the daughters of Jerusalem are puzzled. Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness? They paid attention to her direction. They noticed that she was coming up from the wilderness. She's not entangled in the wilderness. She's not trapped in the wilderness. She's not overcome by the wilderness. She's not held down by the wilderness. She's coming up from the wilderness. And that ought to be true of every child of God. That ought to be true of all the Lord's churches. She's not wandering aimlessly in the wilderness. She's not lost in the wilderness. She's coming up from the wilderness. That word cometh is present tense. That means she is separating more and more and more from the wilderness. That ought to be so. Today, God's people are going further and further and further into the wilderness. But what ought to be true is each and every day, we come up from the wilderness just a little bit more. We become more and more and more separated from the wilderness. I'm talking separation in every single area of our life. Dress, the places we go, the way we think, the ideas we have, our viewpoints, all of these things. We are to be separating. We are to be coming out of the wilderness more and more and more. Yet what we see today is God's people think more like the world every single day. And we ought to be thinking less like the world every single day. We ought to be coming stranger and stranger and stranger to this world. They ought to look at us and scratch their heads and say, who in the world is that? Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness? If we live above the routines of the world, we're going to be thought to be very, very strange. That shouldn't bother us. If it bothers you to be thought of as strange to the world, you need to get your heart right with God. Your heart's not right. Your thinking's not right. It should not bother you. It should bother you if the world doesn't think you're strange. It should bother you if the world thinks you're part of them. That's what ought to disturb you. It should not disturb us that they don't want anything to do with us. There isn't anybody whose heart is right with God who will struggle with separating from the world. And you won't have to separate from them. They'll separate from you. You do what's right, and they won't be able to stand it very long. Now, there are some that God puts in our lives, and He causes them to stay with us for His own purposes and reasons. But for the most part, you do what you're supposed to do. You tell them about God, they'll separate from you. You won't have to make that decision. Should I separate from them? They'll leave you. And that shouldn't bother you. That shouldn't bother you. The only way it should bother you is the fact that they're lost and they need to be saved. But it should not bother you that they have separated from you, because it's not about us. So she's coming up from the wilderness. Notice, thirdly, the company that she keeps. Leaning upon her beloved. Notice those two words, her beloved. 23 times she uses the words, my beloved, my beloved. She loved the Lord. She had a fervent love for the Lord. There was a depth in her love to the Lord. Notice in chapter 3, verse 1, about halfway through that verse, it's a short verse, but it says, whom my soul loveth. Verse 2, about halfway through. Whom my soul loveth. The last phrase of verse 3. Whom my soul loveth. Halfway down in verse 4. Whom my soul loveth. She didn't just love the Lord with her lips. She loved the Lord from the depths of her soul. So much so that she's coming up from the wilderness. And I believe that's the key to living above the wilderness. It's to have a love in our soul, a love with depth, a love with roots for the Lord. And you won't want to dwell in the wilderness. So we see the company she keeps. Notice her posture. She's leaning upon her beloved. She's coming up from the wilderness, and she's leaning upon her beloved. That speaks of His presence. You can't lean on something unless it's present. It also speaks of his nearness. You can't lean unless it's near. She's leaning upon her beloved. To lean is to shift our weight from self to something else. She has shifted her weight from self to her beloved. She is leaning upon her beloved. When you lean on something, you believe that whatever you are leaning upon is able to support your weight. So the fact that she was leaning upon her beloved shows that she believes that he was able. That he was able to bear her weight. This is a position of confidence. She is leaning upon her beloved. Not only is that a position of confidence, it is a position of dependence. She is leaning upon her beloved. That is, she has cast herself upon him. She has joined herself to him. She is in association with him. She is cleaving to him. She's leaning. She's leaning upon her beloved because she knows that the journey is long and the road is perilous and that she is weak and she is unable. So what does she do? Does she quit? Does she sit down? No, she leans upon her beloved, the one whom she knew was able. You see, she's experienced by leaning upon him. She is experiencing his maintaining strength, his maintaining power. She is experiencing his sustaining grace. She is experiencing his keeping power. She is experiencing his help by leaning upon her beloved. She's leaning upon him. And in so doing, she's identifying herself with him. But notice what it says. She cometh, and as she comes, she's leaning upon her beloved. What that means is they're both moving in the same direction. She's coming, and she's leaning upon her beloved. They are both moving in the same direction. You cannot lean on God if you're moving in the opposite direction of God. And God leads us up from the wilderness. She's leaning upon her beloved. This says some things about him. It says that he's real. Try leaning on something that's imaginary. You're going to fall. I mean, if you lean on something, it's got to be real. She's leaning upon her beloved. That means he's a reality to her. But it means something else. It means he's approachable. If I'm going to lean on that wall, I've got to approach that wall. And that she's leaning upon her beloved means that she has approached him. That means that he is approachable. He is sympathizing. He's sympathetic to her. He allows her to lean. And while she's leaning, they're walking because they're coming. Now, it's difficult to walk if someone's leaning on you. But not for the Lord. She's leaning upon her beloved. And he's sympathetic to her. He's sympathetic to her weakness. He's sympathetic to her need to lean. This shows that he was a friend who was near. It shows that he took part with her. He allowed her to lean. And He is still willing to allow you to lean. He is still willing for you to approach Him, to lean all your fatigue and weariness and weakness upon Him. And He's able to bear it all. She's leaning upon her beloved. Again, that's present tense. And I believe that she's leaning more and more heavily each step of the way. That's why she's coming up out of the wilderness. The reason people are going down into the wilderness is because they're not leaning. It's because they're not going in the same direction as Him. But each and every day we ought to lean a little bit more. We ought to shift a little bit more of our weight each and every day. People say, "Oh, I've given it all." No, you haven't. It's very rare, if ever, that you and I give all and lean completely upon Him. Oh, how we need to lean. This is a wonderful place to be able to lean. This is a privileged place to be able to lean upon Him. But then notice this question again. Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved? She has a testimony. She has a testimony. They noticed that she was different. Who is this? They noticed that she was strange. Who is this? She's spoken to us. And that's not the first time she spoke to the daughters of Jerusalem. She has several times. And they finally ask, who is this? She had a testimony that she was different. That ought to be the testimony of every child of God. That ought to be the testimony of every one of the Lord's churches. It ought never be said of a child of God by the world, he's one of us. That ought never to be said. They noticed that she was different. They also noticed that she was ascending above the world. Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness? They noticed what she was doing. And they noticed she wasn't going down further into the wilderness. She wasn't trapped in the wilderness. She wasn't stuck there. They noticed that she was coming out of the wilderness. And that was so odd to see someone come up from the wilderness that they asked, who is this? And it is odd today. It is strange today to see somebody who wants to do what's right. That's an oddity. And therefore, if you just do what's right, people are going to notice. You don't do it to be noticed. But people are going to notice. People are going to notice at work. They're going to notice at school. Well, in those places, I just try to fit in. You ought to repent. You ought never try to fit in with the world. It has the agenda of Satan. Its thinking is patterned after Satan. Why would you want to fit in as a child of God? They noticed that she was different. They noticed that her life was different. She wasn't stuck like everyone else. She was ascending above the world. They also noticed her confidence and dependence She was leaning. They noticed that about her. As they looked upon her, not knowing who she was, and her way of living was so very strange, but they can't help but notice she's leaning. She has confidence in this one. She is depending upon this one. They notice that. And they ought to notice that about us. Something else they noticed. They noticed her love for him. Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness leaning upon another? That's not what it says. Upon her beloved. They look at her and they could tell by the way she was walking. They could tell by the way she was leaning. They could tell by her bodily actions that she loved this one. That he was her beloved. And the world ought to look at us and know they love the Lord. They love the Lord. And that causes them to ask, who is this? There aren't many today that love the Lord. There aren't many amongst God's people whom you can honestly look at and say they love the Lord. It's a strange thing to see somebody who loves the Lord. It's strange. It's so strange that you can't help but notice it. So it ought to be, they noticed her love for him. But then notice, most importantly of all, and we'll close, they noticed him leaning upon her beloved. They noticed Christ. And people, when they look at our lives, they ought to notice the one we walk with. The one that we lean upon. The Lord. They may not know, they may not understand what they're seeing. But they see Him. And unless the Lord works upon their hearts, when they see Him, they don't like it. It scares them. It scares them. It makes them nervous. Oh, I don't want the world to feel uncomfortable around me. Why not? There's only one way they can feel comfortable, completely comfortable, and that is you act like them. The world ought not feel comfortable around us. The world ought to be a little fearful. Well, what are they going to do next? I don't want to be with him. I'm afraid he might embarrass me. They notice the Lord. When people look at our lives, they ought to notice the Lord. This, you put all this together, and this is what it means to come up from the wilderness. And one day, right now in this world, we are to be conforming to the image of Christ. It is an ongoing process. Coming up out from the world, it is an ongoing process. And one day, He's going to come. And we are going to literally be raised above this world. And until then, our walk is to be just as it is described here in Song of Solomon 8 in verse 5. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in a verse of song. Let's all stand. Brother Larry will lead us in singing.